Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, it is a good morning. It's good to be here with you and share on this subject. Hopefully, most of you were here last evening and were able to listen to John's talk on integrity. And he laid a great groundwork for the subject this morning. I really appreciated what he had to say. And so if you were here last night and were able to take that in, it'll just help you understand what we're talking about this morning when we talk about integrity in the school. And that's what we're going to talk about, integrity in the school setting. Now, what's interesting, and maybe some of you realize this, maybe some of you don't, but pastors, when the Lord lays a message on a pastor's heart, he has a lot more time to deal with the pastor on that subject than he does the congregation. And I found out when he laid this, or when I was asked to do this, he had a lot of time to talk to me about integrity in the school setting. And how does it match up? How does United Christian School match up with regard to integrity? And I have seven teachers here from United Christian School today. So what I say is going to go back home with me. They're gonna remember what I say. And so I might be reminded along the way. And that's a good thing. It's good for us to be reminded sometimes of the things that we've talked about, things we share. And this has been a meaningful study for me, just to see the areas that I need to grow in personally, the areas that our school needs to grow in. And some of our teachers, of course, we can all grow in this. And that was one thing that I liked about what John said last night, that all of us are on a growing experience when it comes to integrity. If anyone here says, I've got integrity completely set, I'm as far as I can go, I would say you probably really have a long way to go, because that's not quite how it works at all. And I also want to recognize this morning, many of you have more years of experience in the classroom. Now, I know looking across the audience, I'm probably one of the oldest ones here. That's kind of a shocking thing to think about, actually, but probably one of the oldest ones here. But as far as actually in the classroom, many of you have more experience than I do. And probably as we go through some of this, you're going to think of things that maybe I didn't think of, and that's great. And think about those things. How do you apply them to your school, your setting, your life, as we look at these things? And I really do want these to be very practical things today that John talked about. The whole idea and our theme this weekend about being, hearts of integrity, hands of skill, that type of thing. Well, I want to take that integrity this morning and kind of really put it into shoe leather and into the hands of skill that are going to be using it, and so that we can have hands of skill, and that integrity comes from the heart, goes into the hands, and people see it every day. And really, that's what it's all about. You can't last very long trying to act like you're a person of integrity, especially in a school setting when you're around a lot of people, a lot of young people, and you try to act like a person of integrity and you're really not, that doesn't last very long. So at some point, people will see that. Integrity has a lot to do with truth, and my wife Cindy got this in an email just a couple days ago, and so some of you may have already read this, may have heard it, but I thought it's kind of sets the tone a little bit for maybe how we operate in our schools, how we need to think about integrity, honesty among our students, allowing them to truly be honest within certain parameters, of course. But this is a little story, kind of humorous, but I think it should tell us a little something about how to react to our students when they're really honest with us. This little boy says, our teacher asked what my favorite animal was. And I said, fried chicken. She said I wasn't funny, but she couldn't have been right because everyone else laughed. My parents told me always to tell the truth. I did. Fried chicken is my favorite animal. I told my dad what happened, and he said my teacher was probably a member of PETA. He said they love animals very much. I do too, especially chicken, pork, and beef. Anyway, my teacher sent me to the principal's office. I told him what happened. He laughed too. Then he told me not to do it again. The next day in class, my teacher asked me what my favorite live animal was. I told her it was chicken. And she asked me why. So I told her it was because you can make them into fried chicken. You all have a student like this, don't you? She sent me back to the principal's office. He laughed and told me not to do it again. I don't understand. My parents taught me to be honest, but my teacher doesn't like when I am. Today, my teacher asked me to tell her what famous person I admired most. I told her Colonel Sanders. Guess where I am now? Kind of a humorous story, but sometimes we ask for honesty, and we get it, and then we don't like it. And I understand there are certain parameters, of course. Okay. Oh, we got two bullets there. What does integrity look like at school? And that's really what we want to look at this morning. We're going to think about why is integrity important? What goals should we have? How will we strive to reach those goals? And we'll talk about this just a little bit more toward the end of the talk. And in the school setting, integrity must exist at all levels. Any place you begin to take integrity out, it's not going to work. And I don't know what your particular school is, if you have a supporting church or supporting churches, but it has to start there. And then the school board and the administration, principal, there needs to be integrity at all those levels. And the teachers, and that's what we're going to be primarily focusing on this morning, and then, of course, families and the students. But since I'm talking to teachers this morning, that's kind of how I've geared our talk for this morning, that we're going to be primarily thinking about how it looks in the lives of the teachers. And I forgot something, and I want to take care of that right now. Totally forgot. I'm sorry. There are some handouts here. Faith Builders was kind enough to print out these slides so you can follow along. I don't think we went too far at this point that you can't catch up with us there. But go ahead, and you can pass those out, and I'll talk a little bit while that's happening. One of the things about that I mentioned that we can all be growing in this whole thing of integrity, it really comes down to what was discussed last evening. And that is the fact that if you don't really have a heart for integrity or a desire to be a person of integrity, that is what needs to change first. I can tell you a lot of things this morning of how integrity looks, what we can do to get there. But if you really are not a person of integrity, or if I'm not a person of integrity, if I don't care about that, if I'm just putting on a front, these things really don't matter that much. The first thing you need to do is really seek God, seek God's face, and desire to be a person like Christ, our perfect example of integrity. I don't know, some of you have probably heard this analogy, and I think it really does hold true in the school as well, and that is the idea of a chain only being as strong as its weakest link. Sometimes I use a chain for things, pull things or whatever. And if there's one weak link in that chain, that concerns me. I'd rather get a different chain or replace the link, take it out, something. Because it'll break otherwise. And I think that's one of the things in our schools. A school that I had some connection with recently had a real breach of integrity in just one of the teachers. But it affected the whole school. It affected other people, other lives. And so if you're in your school as a teacher and you think, well, it really doesn't matter if I'm not a person of integrity, as long as everyone else is, that's not true. Because often, always, what you do affects other people, and it'll affect the school. It may even cause some families to pull out and leave the school if there are areas where integrity is not a part of your life. Okay, let's go now that you have that, and we're going to look at several areas with regard to teachers today. We're going to talk about in the classroom. That's what we'll be talking about most of the time. We'll maybe a little bit with other faculty, and then we'll talk about it outside of the school as well. So let's start with in the classroom. And these are the areas that we're going to look at as far as in the classroom. We're going to talk about our use of time and being impartial. We're going to talk about apologizing. Last night, John talked about the fact that, for teachers, sometimes we think we always have to be right, or we have to know everything. And, sometimes it's even okay. Actually, it's always okay to do this if it's true, to admit if a student knows more about something than you do. And sometimes they do. Sometimes you might say, you might have an idea, or you might say, let's do this problem this way, and a student is like, why are we doing it? Now, you have to be careful about that. The student that always thinks they know better than the teacher, and they're always trying to do it. But sometimes there may be something where you actually don't know, or you say something incorrectly, and a student says, Miss So-and-so, I think you missed that one. Admit it and go on. Well, we'll talk a lot more about apologizing here in a minute. Working under authority is an area we'll look at, getting the whole story, keeping our commitments, and teacher-student relationships, academics, and order and discipline. So those are a number of things we're going to take a look at. First thing I want to talk about is our use of time. And we have Colossians 3:22-24 here, and I realize pulling this out of the context where it's at, it's talking there a little bit about like servants and maybe even so much as slaves and their masters. But it says, servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And this is what I want us to think about right here, is the fact of, and whatsoever you do, do it heartily as unto the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. Now, you might say, well, I feel a little bit like a servant sometimes. I don't get paid a lot, and I work hard. And maybe that's how you feel about your job. I don't know, but the fact is, we're doing this for the Lord. And I want to make that very clear. You do not have, I hope you're not teaching school just because it's a job that's available. If you are, I would suggest finding a different job that's available and doing something completely different. Because if you're just there because it's a job, it's not going to work out very well for you or the students and the students' parents. You need to be doing it unto the Lord and doing it because you sense a call to do it, or you're there to do it heartily and you're going to give it your best shot. So as we think about that, the use of our time, how well do you use your time? Now, you might say, well, make that much difference? I'm salaried. I get a paycheck. Doesn't matter how much time I put in. And so why does it matter how I use my time? The fact is, we are to be stewards of our time, and if you are wasting time doing things that are unnecessary, especially at school, you're not using your time wisely, it will likely affect your prep time, it will affect how well you're prepared to teach your classes, it will affect how well you grade things, it'll affect how well you're prepared just to meet your class, if you're in a good mood or a bad mood, or you're tired or you can't stay awake, that kind of thing. So we do need to use our time wisely, be good stewards of our time. Now that brings us kind of into the thing of technology. And I enjoy technology somewhat, but we need to be careful about technology and web use. It's pretty easy to spend a lot of time. And we may start out right. In other words, we get on the web because we're researching something, or we need to take care of something. And then that research takes us to something else and something else and something else. And the first thing you know, we've done a lot of research, most of which really doesn't apply to the particular lesson that we were originally looking at. And then we go to class and we're still unprepared because we've spent too much time on the web. So be careful about that. And of course, with regard to integrity, I think we all understand the importance of just what type of things we're looking at and doing on the web as well. Facebook. You take time at school to do a lot on Facebook. Now, I'm not talking necessarily about after school or in the mornings, but I've come to understand that some teachers, you know, that they get the class off to doing their work, and then they're back and they're updating Facebook, you know, and the classes. And I'm not saying that happens at UCS, so better not be. Anyway, but this can be a problem. And I've talked to administrators that said they've had problems with teachers that spend time when they really should be teaching or taking care of things at school, but they're busy on Facebook and taking care of that. And we'll talk just a little bit more about that later. Maybe you're Twittering. Oh, maybe you got to tell everybody what you're doing and what you're teaching now and what's going on in your school. And for the most part, most people that would get your tweets probably really don't care anyway. So don't waste the time doing that. Maybe texting is another one. And I'm not saying there are never times when you may have something that you definitely need to text someone about. But be careful. That's another area. I was talking to an administrator one time who had a real problem with one of the teachers. He'd come check in on the room, and she'd be back there just, you know, texting away, texting, while the students were supposed to be doing their work and so forth. And that's not integrity. That's not it. That's being selfish. That's using your time unwisely, and that's not integrity at all. Phone calls, again, be very careful about that. If you have to make a phone call, you have to receive a call, something like that, but don't waste the time from your students and from your teaching time just to be on the phone talking about this or that. You have to be very, very careful about that. So be careful about your use of technology with regard to your use of time. Limit research during class time, and I put that on there because you know, sometimes you can get involved in things even in class, even when the class is there and you're trying to find something for them or do something and look something up, and you end up wasting their time and your time when you could have done it prior to the class time. You could have worked on it earlier and taken care of that earlier. Okay, let's go to being impartial now. And I don't know, I think this is maybe a little bit bigger problem than what we like to admit sometimes. In James 2:1 it says, "My brethren, have not faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with respect of persons. But if you have respect to persons, you commit sin and are convinced of the law as transgressors." Now I recognize that that's talking there about if someone comes into your church and you sit the rich people up front and the poor people in the back and that type of thing. But I do think it also applies to us as teachers and administrators in our schools. We cannot favor some students over other students, even if they are easier to love. Now, I could ask for a show of hands of how many of you have students in your school or in your classrooms that are just hard to love. And some of you, because you would hate to admit it, won't raise your hands, and then we're already breached integrity, so I'm not even going to ask you to raise your hands on that. But some students are easier to love, and some students are easier to teach. But it's not integrity if at some point you just decide some students, or you just kind of hold them off, push them out, I'm done with them, and you focus on the other students, and they can do nothing wrong, and these are always doing something wrong, and you become impartial. And I'll tell you what, students will pick that up very quickly. As a matter of fact, sometimes they'll make it up when it doesn't even exist. But when it does exist, then they really pick it up, and it can become quite an issue. And this doesn't mean that all students are treated exactly the same. You can't do that. I remember in high school, our government teacher, I don't know how many times I heard him say this, but I've not forgotten it, and that is, life is not always fair. And when it comes to the classroom setting, you can't treat every student exactly the same. That's not what we're talking about when we're talking about being impartial. Of course, some students have different needs than others, and some students may take a lot more time. Some students will need more time. Some need more discipline than others, and different types of discipline than others. So it doesn't mean that just because you're not partial, that somehow you don't deal out discipline accordingly to one student differently than another, because you know what works with one and you know what works with another. But you're not harsh with one just because you don't like them. That's easy to do. You just don't like that student, so when they do something wrong, boy, do they get it. And another student, you know, that sweet little girl that's just always so nice and brings you flowers and cookies and all this kind of stuff, and she can do something that's just as bad as this other student, and you just kind of overlook it a little, or you understand what I'm talking about. That's not right. We need to be very careful about that. We still start from the same point without giving special attention to particular students or families. Recently, a student at our school told me he remembered being in a certain grade, and I don't actually know who the teacher was, so, and it wasn't any of the teachers we have now. And it's been quite a while ago, but he said, "Oh, I remember in that particular grade," he named the teacher, and I didn't recognize it, but he said, "Oh, she's so favored," and he mentioned this other student. I said, "Oh, really?" I said, "Why?" "Oh, she was dating his brother." Being impartial to a family, and that can happen too. Or maybe you have a family in your school that you know helps quite a bit financially or something, and so you tend to favor those students. That's not right. We cannot be impartial to families or students. Grading without partiality. That's part of being impartial, is that we grade without impartiality. And I recognize that we may at times expect more from some students than other students based on ability. And I don't know, how many of you here just love grading essays? Any of you just love that? I don't like it. I enjoy assigning essays, not so much just because it's fun to give the assignment, because it's enjoyable to see students actually think and express themselves on paper and have to do some research and some thinking and put that down, and then you can read that and see where they're coming from and help them, you know, work on that. That's enjoyable. But then when it comes to grading it, and you get one student that is very capable of doing a tremendous research report, and another one who struggles to put together a few paragraphs that really make a lot of sense together, and you understand, and they simply, it's just because of their ability, that's just not where they're at. And so you grade these two, and this person's doing the very best they can, and it's nowhere close to this person over here, and yet you can't give this one an A+ just because they're doing the very best they can. We don't just grade on whether or not someone's working hard. And so those things are a challenge to me. I don't know if they're a challenge to you. But one thing to keep in mind when you are grading those types of things, and any type of grading, again, don't read it and say, "Well, because I like this student." Don't allow that to boost their score a couple of points just because you like this student. And this student just gives you trouble, and so, yeah, it might be about a 90, but I'm gonna give an 88 just because I'm the teacher and I can do it. Never do that. That's not integrity, even if you're tempted to do that. Their grading essays, highly subjective, but it must be done carefully. Using a rubric for essays is a good way to help in that area, and it's something that I'm learning, and I think it's helpful for students as well. And it also saves you time. If you know right up front, this is what I'm looking for, this is what I'm expecting, this part of the assignment is going to get this many points, and this is how I'm going to grade it, this part of the assignment's this much and this much, and you know that going into it, it helps you become a little more objective instead of so subjective when it comes to grading an essay, those types of assignments. And it helps your students to know why, and I've had that happen. Maybe you have too. You know, you get in some writing assignments and you hand them back and you try to write a few things on there, but sometimes it's hard to put in words exactly why this one's a 92 and this one's a 99. But you just, somehow as a teacher, that's just where you're at. And you hand them back, and then a student with a 92 says, why did he get a 99? I get a 92. What's the difference here? And so the more you can lay that out objectively, the better off it'll be for you and also for your students as well. Well, let's go to look at apologizing. Some people find this harder to do than others, but I think we all must be willing to apologize. None of us are without fault, and our students know, or usually know, when we do something wrong. I like this quote by John Maxwell. A man must be big enough to admit his mistakes, smart enough to profit from them, and strong enough to correct them. And with that, correcting our mistakes may include apologizing. Your students know when you do something wrong. Other faculty knows when you do something that's not right. Be willing to say, hey, I'm sorry. I messed up on this one. I didn't do this right. Or, you know what, I said something to you in front of the class that I shouldn't have said. I'm sorry about that. Be willing to do that. Now, I think what often happens with this is people get the idea that if they admit they're wrong, that somehow other people will not respect them as well. And I believe that admitting wrong does not reduce respect from others, it increases their respect. If you're willing to admit to your students that you did something that was just not right, something that was wrong, and you tell them you're sorry about it, you will increase the respect from your students. Sometimes apologizing may be going to your class and saying, you know what? I've kind of let this class get a little out of control. You know what? I have not had the control in this class that I should have. And it's not the best learning environment for you. And I'm sorry about that. And we're going to change that. And so I ask your forgiveness for me allowing you to be out of hand. And we're going to change that. And if they recognize the fact that you're admitting that, you know what, it's not just us, it really was your responsibility to keep this thing in line, and you're admitting you haven't done a good job at that, I think they'll respect that. But if you come in and it's just all their fault and you're all over their case and they're thinking, well, you're the teacher, what's the problem here? They know that. Apologies may need to be made to, and I just listed some here, individuals, other faculty, and these depend on who you've wronged, the entire class. If it was something the entire class knows about, something you did there, it may need to be made to the entire school, depending on what you've done. Other authorities over you, you may need to apologize to as well. Let's take a look at working under authority, since we're talking about authorities. And centurion answered, this is centurion come to Christ and ask him to come and heal someone. The centurion answered and said, Lord, I'm not worthy that thou shouldest come under my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. For I am under authority. Notice that. I am under authority, a man under authority, having soldiers under me. And I say to this man, go, and he goeth, and to another, come, and he cometh, to my servant, do this, and he doeth it. When Jesus heard it, he marveled and said to them that followed, verily I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel. But I notice this, he was a man under authority, and he had soldiers under him. Don't expect your students to follow your authority if they see that you're not under your authority. It won't happen. They will pick up on that very quickly. Oh, my teacher doesn't follow the administration, they don't follow the policy, they don't follow the school board, they don't follow the pastor, whoever you're under, and then you expect them to follow your authority, and it just doesn't happen. And so I don't know exactly in your particular setting who your authority might be, but if we want our students to respect our authorities, we must respect others. Your authority might be the church, school board, policy manual, administrator, principal, And just be careful what you say and how you say it about those that are over you. Again, your students can pick that up very quickly. If you have a particular policy in your school, and maybe it's not a very popular one, maybe the principal came up with it, the school board, and students don't like it, and you say, well, yeah, I think it's the stupidest thing that you can imagine as well, but you know we got to do it because Mr. So-and-so said we have to. And then you come up with a policy for your class, and they look at each other and say, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of, too, so I don't think we have to do it, you know. So be careful what you say and how you say it about your authority. And I had a student one time tell me, well, Mr. Yoder, why don't we just do this? After all, you make the rules. You're the principal. You make the rules, don't you? And I said, no. I said, I have a school board that's over me. Well, the school board can do it. They make the rules. They can do it. I said, you forget there are ministers on our school board from the supporting churches. Oh, well, and what they didn't realize, and then they said, well, it goes back to the churches, and I guess I can do whatever. I said, well, don't forget, I said, a lot of your parents are part of those churches. And so if the churches say this, you know, it's what they didn't realize was that authority structure goes out quite a ways and sometimes comes right back around to the parents. And so really, if the students don't like some of the policies, sometimes they don't recognize that it's quite a structure, and we need to work within that structure as people of integrity. Okay, getting the whole story. Have you ever had a student come to you and they just tell you all about what something that happened, and you decide, boy, this other student's going to get it. I tell you what, I'm going to go find that student, and we're going to deal with this thing, and we're going to take care of it. Maybe. And for a principal, sometimes I get a story from a teacher, and it's pretty easy to make a judgment right there, you know, because my teachers are good teachers and they know what happens. And then sometimes you talk to the student, you get a little bit different angle on the thing. Or one student comes to you and in Proverbs it says, he who states his case first seems right until his rival comes and cross-examines him. That's the Amplified Version. Also, it says, he who answers a matter before he hears the facts, it is folly and a shame to him. Be very careful about not getting the whole story. It becomes a thing of lack of integrity if you hear one side of the story, and that's all you hear, and you make judgment from it, and then try to discipline and so forth. Don't draw a conclusion until you've heard both or more sides of the story. You're probably going to hear this side, that side, the other side, and somewhere in that lies the right side. And make sure you try to do a good job of listening to it. And that comes back a little bit to this thing of being impartial. Sometimes there are students that you think are always straight with you. Oh, yes, that's little honest Mary. She would never tell me something that's not correct. And later you find out that her side of the story really was skewed. Don't just assume because this student seems to be, you know, kind of floats in the class with a halo in the mornings, never going to tell you something that's not a little bit skewed about another student, because she doesn't like Billy anyway, because Billy pulled her hair, and so she's going to tell things a little slanted. We're all human. Our students, as you know, are human, and so be careful about that. Sometimes getting to the truth takes time and diligence. It really does. Be swift to hear or to listen, slow to speak, and slow to anger. Okay, keeping our commitments is another one. And this is one I've had to kind of learn the hard way. If you tell your students you will do something, follow through with the commitment. It is better to surprise than to disappoint. How many of you have started the school year with great intentions of, you know what, we get this and this, we're going to go here and we're going to do this field trip, or we're going to do this, or I'll bring you all ice cream and donuts and candy or whatever. And then things change, or you forget about it, or you realize that you're not going to be able to fit it into the time structure, or you go to your administrator and say, hey, can we do this? And he says, no, I don't think so. And all of a sudden you find yourself kind of in a bind. And I've done this type of thing. I know I'm learning this one the hard way, that sometimes you have great intentions, and so you tell your students you're going to do something, and then it doesn't work out. And you know what? To students, that's a big deal. I found that out. It's really a big deal. And they look at that as a breach of integrity. They really do. They look at that and say, you know what? You don't keep your word. Why should we keep our word? You don't keep your word. So be careful about the commitments that you make, especially to your students. Be very careful about that. It's a whole lot better to someday they come to class and you've got three boxes of donuts sitting there and they didn't know it was going to happen, and I realize that's just a small type of commitment, but then to tell them you're going to do it and then forget about it for 6 weeks straight and they give up on you, you know. It's better to surprise than to disappoint. Teacher-student relationships. This is one where I think it's very, very important in our schools. Integrity, this is a big area when it comes to integrity. Be very discreet. And by that I'm thinking about especially, and a lot of you are young, be very careful about relationships, especially male teachers. Be very careful about any kind of touching, any kind of thing like that with regard to female students. And it can work the other way as well. But you need to be very careful about that, especially older students. Be very discreet. It's a thing of integrity. Remember that you are a teacher, not a student. And you need to keep those relationships that way. It's very important. Even if you are a young teacher, remember, you are the teacher, and the students are the students, and don't breach that. And this is one, child molesting is all too common in our public and private schools, and I'm sure many of you know of cases, even within our conservative Mennonite circles, where this thing has been a problem, and it leaves a bad mark on our schools, on your school, if that would be a problem, that becomes an issue, and it hurts people and can destroy lives. So it's something that you can never give in to something like that. And if you suspect it in your school or in a home, then you need to talk to the proper school authorities or other authorities to deal with it. Don't allow something like that to be going on. If you suspect it in the school and just think, well, I just won't say anything about it, that's just wrong. Don't do that. It's something that like I said, unfortunately, it's too common in school settings. Let's take a look a little bit of academics with regard to integrity. And we must keep in mind that students come to school to learn academics. Now, I realize there's a balance. We want to teach them a lot of things about life and so forth, but let's face it, school really is about academics. If we say we are a school and are not striving for excellence in academics, we are not functioning with integrity. Let me give you an example. How many of you would like to go to a church where it would be admitted that if we grow spiritually, fine. If not, it's not that big a deal. What we really want to have here is a place where we can come, we can just fellowship, kind of a safe place to stay away from the world. So, you know, we don't want to be out there in the world, so we're going to come to church and be safe and kind of have a wall around us, and we're just going to hang out, and we're going to function, and we'll teach a little bit of Bible, but you know what? If we really don't grow that much spiritually, it's not that big a deal. I wouldn't want to go to a church like that. And I don't think most of the parents that pay the money to send their children to our schools would be okay with that academically. Now, I realize some of them care more about academics than others. And I know for a teacher it can be frustrating if you care about academics and a child's parents really don't care. The only reason they're there is because they don't want to bother the homeschool, they don't like the public school, and they know they have to until they're at least 16 or so. And so, here, you take them. If they learn, they learn. If they don't, they don't. I know that can be frustrating. But for the most part, parents send their children to school because they want them to learn academics. And I think we need to strive for excellence in that area. I really do. And that's something that I'm learning as well. Now, that doesn't mean that we ignore the whole aspect of trying to teach them other life lessons, but we do need to strive for academics. And academics, incidentally, can be a part of character training and integrity. As we learn, teach them things about academics and the world around them, it should be one way of learning just how to be a better person and so forth. Discipline with integrity, order and discipline. You need a discipline with integrity, clear expectations, and that's one that I am trying to grow in myself. Don't discipline children in your classroom if you haven't given them a clear understanding of what is expected. That's not integrity. You kind of give a vague idea of what's expected in your class, and then they do something that fits within that vague parameter, and then you get all upset about the fact that they're not quite where you wanted them to be. Well, make it clear where they need to be. Make clear expectations if you're going to discipline. Another thing is to keep proper order. Proper order allows students to learn in a safe environment. And this is what parents pay to receive. If we don't allow that, we don't make that possible. And one of the things about a safe environment is such things as internet use and how they're going to be on the internet and how that's going to be controlled and so forth. Use grace along with wisdom when you discipline. Remember, you appreciate grace when it's given to you. And so give that to students as well. Here's one that finances, if you have responsibility regarding money and finances, you must treat that responsibility with utmost integrity. Never borrow money from the school funds. If you have a connection with the money in the school, never decide, I'm going to take some money out because I need it this weekend. I'll put it in next week. That's not integrity. Dangerous. Don't take things that belong to the school for personal use unless it is allowed and you understand it's allowed or you've asked for that. That's stealing is what it is. Okay, some things out of school. How do your students or how do our students see us out of school? If your students meet you someplace out of school, does our dress, our activities, music, etc., is it completely different than what we endorse while we're in school? Your students will see you here, they'll see you there, different places depending on your age, and it might make a difference. What do they see when they see you out of the school setting? Do they see someone that's completely different than when they went at school and someone that's different than the things that you promote at school? What do our students see on Facebook? I told you I'd get back to Facebook a little bit, and you probably say, oh, you're just an old guy and you don't like Facebook and whatever. I will say this, I'm amazed at what people put on Facebook, somehow thinking that no one else in the world's going to see it. You'd be amazed at what teachers and pastors see on Facebook, even if they don't have Facebook. Now you're wondering, okay, how are you seeing it? Well, I tell my students there are ways. I will say I'm amazed at what people will put on there. And if you think, oh, well, I just won't friend any of my students, which is actually something you should seriously consider anyway, if you have Facebook, is friending your students. But I won't friend any of my students. They won't see what's on there. That's foolishness. They're going to see what you put on there, what you post. And if you put things on there that don't line up with what you stand for in the classroom, they will see it, and be very, very careful about that. And besides that, remember this: other people that see it know where you work, what you represent, who you represent. Make sure that you touchdown online backup. Well, that's interesting. We don't want that anyway, right now. Okay. What students see on Facebook, be very, very careful about that one. What do you say about your school when you're someplace else? You talk highly of your school? Do you run your school into the ground when you're actually not at school? Do you say bad things about your school? Bad things about other faculty, teachers? Do our students see consistent Christian lives every time they meet us, every time they see us? Well, I want to wrap this up pretty soon here. Why does it matter? Why does integrity in the school matter? Why are some of these areas that we looked at this morning that I believe, personally, I believe they affect integrity? And they are affected by integrity. Why does it really matter? Do we want it just to make us look better? A little bit like John was saying last night, we want to have the holy look, or we want to look like a person of integrity, and so that's why we do it. Is it to make our school look better? Well, we do want our schools to look good. But is that the only reason? Is that why it really matters? Personally, I think it's all about the fact that we represent Jesus Christ. We all are part of Christian schools. And a Christian school is supposed to be a representation and a place where Jesus Christ is taught. A representation of Christ and a place where things about God are taught. That's why integrity in the school matters. That's why these different areas that we looked at, I believe, are important, because especially when our students look at those areas and they see those things, and it doesn't line up with what they're told about God, that becomes confusing to our students. And so that's why it's important, because it's about Jesus Christ. And then it becomes imperative for students to see a school of integrity. Students that don't see integrity in the school, but they're told this is what God is all about, and it doesn't line up at all. And I'm not saying, again, that we're perfect. We're all growing in this thing. That's why sometimes we have to come back and apologize so they can recognize as well that we're humans just like they are. But they need to see that line up because we're trying to show Jesus Christ to them. It's important for the community to see a school of integrity as well, and it's for the same reason, again, because we represent Jesus Christ in our community. We want to see our students be boys and girls, men and women of integrity. And we must create an atmosphere where honesty and integrity is fostered and dishonesty is repressed. When I say that about an atmosphere where honesty and integrity is fostered, how do you deal with a student when they come to you and they're honest about something that you're not very happy about, the fact of what they did? Or let me give you an example that happened this year. I had an older student, high school student. I had asked to pick up some homework, and I'll be honest with you, I don't even remember exactly what the assignment was or what it was that I suspected. I think he had corrected some answers or something when we were grading something or doing something. Anyway, I remember going back, and I suspected there was a problem. And I'm going back, and I was picking up the work, and I get to this boy, and he hands me the work, and I ask him about it. And I don't remember if he hadn't done it, and I thought he was doing it in class, or if he had corrected something. Whatever it was, I asked him about if he had done it, and he said no. But he kind of, you know the look. You know, it's really hard to just look you in the eye. When they can really look you in the eye and lie like that, you've got a problem, a bigger problem. But I knew something wasn't quite right. But he had told me that, and I didn't know that I really had enough to go on to deal with it, so I let it go. The next morning, I was in my classroom there getting some things set up for class, and when he came to school that morning, he came directly to that room. He didn't even go down to high school room, take off his coat, and he came directly to that room and said, "Mr. Yoder," he said, "I've got to be honest with you." He said, "You know, I told you yesterday," whatever it was, he said, I was wrong. I had changed it or asked somebody else to answer something. He totally admitted it, and he said, "I'm sorry." He said, "I'll do whatever, you know, if you want me to redo it or something, or just give me an F on the whole thing, whatever." You know, he was, and to me, that is so encouraging when a student does that on their own. Now, what should my response have been? Should I have said, "Well, listen, I'll tell you, yeah, I'm going to give you a zero on that one and the next four assignments"? Do you think he would have ever come to me again and said that he had been dishonest? I doubt it. And I don't even remember exactly what we did on that. But I told him, I thanked him for coming and being honest. And I said, I was quite sure you weren't being honest with me. So I said, thank you for doing that. I forgive you, and I forget if I had gave some consequences at all. But the fact was, he came to me in honesty. And I think that's something that we need to be very careful about with our students. When they are honest, not when you have to, I'm not talking about, you know, you get the paddle out and you lay it on the desk and then you finally get it up and you know you're, and then all of a sudden the truth comes out. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when a student comes to you and they're honest about something, it may be very disappointing to you. I'm not saying there are never consequences with that, but let's make sure that we foster a setting. We have a setting that fosters honesty, that encourages honesty and integrity, even if sometimes we look at it and we're disappointed with what they actually tell us. But if they're admitting and they're telling us the truth, let's encourage that. Have a safe place to be honest. Allow students to admit faults. Be careful of the consequences. Work to reach the heart. And I realize in a school setting, sometimes if you can't get to the heart, you still have to get to something so that you have order. I understand that. But the goal should be, obviously, to reach the heart and work at that. And sometimes with some students, it may take a few years to get there. But that's what we want. We have a school with students that have hearts of integrity, things will go so much better, and you understand that. Help students realize why integrity is important. And make the connection between integrity and honoring God. If we give the idea that integrity is just something out there so that the school functions a little better, or so they get a better grade or something like that, help them to see the connection between integrity and God. Remember that you are an example. If we want our students to see integrity and we're not willing to apply it, don't expect it from our students. We are an example. And again, it's not just a job. It's a tremendous privilege. It can be a tremendous challenge, but let's operate our schools with integrity. Thank you.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.